All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Spellbreakers podcast. We have someone who, even though I don't believe in idols, if I were to, he would be at the top of the list. James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. A man who needs no introduction, but we will give one out of respect. James is well known for his tireless and ongoing contributions to the freedom and truth community, if you will. Some of my personal favorite works by James are Century of Enslavement, The History of the Federal Reserve, 9/11 War Games, 9/11 Trillions Follow the Money. Basically, all his 9/11 stuff is just incredible. How Big Oil Conquered the World, Why Big Oil Conquered the World, Who is Bill Gates, A Brief History of Hopium, which I recently rewatched in anticipation for speaking to him today. James has laid many of the foundations of knowledge that modern truthers and truth tellers and researchers, I believe, take for granted. So without further ado, James, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for your time. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you. Thank you for that kind introduction. I'm blushing ear to ear, but I consider myself an iconoclast. So if I am an idol, I think that means that you have to smash me. So I'm ready for it.
No, I appreciate it. I've been watching you since pretty much the beginning. And, you know, I do want to thank you so much for your work. And on top of that, I want to thank you for always being a voice of reason. It seems like for whatever reason, you have never been pulled into the kind of hype of the day. You know, I think the latest thing that comes to mind as an example would be Q, right? You've always been very level-headed and able to just report the facts as you see them, dive deep, but not kind of get into, you know, what others would call, you know, crazy territory. So I'd be curious, you know, where does that come from? Is that just your background? Is that something that you're really, you know, putting intentionality into? Or, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I think that's the right way to ask it. Is there intentionality behind that? I don't believe that there is. I think it is just who I am and where I am. But having said that, everyone has their quote unquote crazy line, the thing that they think, oh, that's a step too far. And everyone's going to draw that slightly differently. And I just have my lines where I think this is reasonable and that is unreasonable. Other people will come to different conclusions. And I'm perfectly okay with that. It's not that I have ever sat there with my audience lecturing down to them, you must believe what I believe. Quite the contrary. What I believe the value that I do of the work that I do is that I will put all of the information that I have out there. I will put the sources to the information I have, but I always encourage people to check the sources and put that information together in your own way. And in fact, one example of that I could point to that I just released as we are talking here just within the past couple of days was my Secret History of Hamas article, in which I have lots of different information there about Hamas and the links to different books and scholarly articles and things that you can read about the history. But I am very clear to stress in that article, well, this is the way that I put this information together. Other people will put it together differently. And for example, I link to an article by Robert Inlakesh that makes a very different argument than the one that I'm making, because I want people to understand that this is coming from a personal point of view, as all information does. We have been unfortunately indoctrinated to this idea that there's some objectivity, there's some objective cloud that the perfect journalist is floating on top of. But that is an ideological construct that has been inserted into the conversation to make us believe in the unerring truth of these truth tellers sitting on a cloud somewhere that can see everything and know everything. It's nonsense. It's garbage. And the reason they want you to believe it is so that they can spoon feed you stuff that you will unquestioningly believe. So that's maybe a long-winded answer, but that's where I'm coming from. I have my own perspective, and I have my own crazy line, and where I think things are reasonable and where they're unreasonable. And I wouldn't say unshakable in that. If I was unshakable in that, I wouldn't be here, because at one point I drew the crazy line across 9/11 truth. Oh, that sounds a bit, that's a bit out there. But when I started looking into it, oh, well, actually, I'm wrong about that. And I was happy to admit that and to adjust my entire life around encountering that new information. And I am not arrogant enough to believe that I know everything now and I'll never have another breakthrough in my understanding. Of course, that could happen at any time. And I'm always open to that possibility.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot in there. And thank you for sharing that. And you touched on so many things that I appreciate about your work. One is, yes, you are doing a lot of the work, but you're always challenging the reader or the viewer to not only do their own research, but bring up their own conclusions, right? Even your show notes are unparalleled. Going through them is, you know, an exercise. It's a thought exercise in itself, right? So I really do think you bring in a level of intellectualism to these types of topics, which is unrivaled. And I do think to some extent it is to your detriment in that we see a lot of people who just, you know, push the latest thing, the latest hype, the latest craze, use the latest emotional manipulations to get a whole ton of clicks. But a lot of those people seem to burn out, whereas, you know, your message, yes, it has evolved, is the same for all of these years.
You know, that's an interesting point that I do think about from time to time, is that I think a lot of people who are in the alternative media space, far be it from me to speculate on people's inner thoughts and actions, but it seems to me that a lot of people are here to burn brightly and burn quick and burn out, and what's the latest thing, and I'll get some clicks with that, and then they're gone in a short time. But I have always been focused on, no, I'm doing this for decades. I'm going to be around decades from now, and you're still going to be going back to things that I did 25 years ago and going, you know what, he was right about that. And that's what I'm aiming at any rate. I'm sure I don't always hit the mark, but that's my perspective on this. I'm not here for a short time. I'm here for the long haul. And I think that my work so far has stood up to that test, because I do have that in mind when I'm constructing what I do. And again, it's not I'm some great person or something. It's just that I come from a scholarly academic background. If I wasn't doing this, it's very likely that I could have fallen into academia. I'm glad I did not, actually, because I don't want to spend 7 years, you know, studying intimate details of onomatopoeia in the poetry of William Faulkner or something. I mean, I couldn't imagine devoting my life to that. But that's the kind of background that I come from. So that's the level of rigor that I apply to this. And if the conspiracy reality that I'm attempting to outline here is, if there is something truly to it, then it can stand up to that kind of level of inquiry. And I don't know if I have faith in the general population will be interested in this. In fact, I think the Corbett Report is probably too popular in a sense. I can't imagine that most people really understand what I'm doing or really are on board with it. And that's fine. This is for the people who really do actually care about this information, really do check sources, really do read books, which is unfortunately something that is not so common these days, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm fine with this to not be a giant thing. I never want to be an Alex Jones level, you know, figure of reaching hundreds of millions of people. That is not going to be me, and that's not what the Corbett Report is.
Yeah, well, yeah, we thank you for it. And, Jason, I'd be curious of the origin story. I know you've spoken at length and you've done AMAs and such, so, and I don't want to rehash two of that, and, you know, we don't have a ton of time here today, but, you know, for me, I'm just very curious what tipped the scale for you. So I know back in Japan, 2006, you were in some, like, kind of slummy, kind of student dorms, right? Because you're teaching English, is my understanding. And you started just watching videos. I'm assuming some of the Google video, you know, Loose Change. I'm not sure, but, you know, I'd just be really curious, you know, what for you started tipping the scales where you're like, you know, this kind of consensus reality isn't, you know, what I think, what they're telling me, you know, like, walk us through what that was like for you.
Right. Yeah. Well, my audience is rolling their eyes because they've heard this story 1,000 times. But for anyone who hasn't heard this story before, that synopsis might sound weird. So I think the important point of this was, yes, I moved into a very cheap apartment building, roach infested. It was, you know, where a lot of students lived. It wasn't a student dorm, but it was that kind of, you know, that kind of living setup, because I was a poor English teacher here. And it was a convenient place to live. But the important point of it was that for the first time since I had moved out of my parents' house, it had an internet connection already. I didn't have to pay for it. It was just, it's got an internet connection. So, suddenly, instead of going to the internet cafe to check my emails once a week, as I was doing at that point, suddenly I had, I've got internet in my apartment here, and broadband internet, you know, I can watch videos, I can look at documentaries. And so it was that I found myself, as someone who is always interested in politics and news and events and things along those lines, I found myself drawn to that material. This was the Wild West of the internet back in days when you could watch anything on YouTube. They had all sorts of stuff and all sorts of information. Broadband, so I was watching, you know,
the Daily Show
and watch videos, I can look at stuff like that. And it was through the related section, the related videos or the recommended videos on the sidebar, that I started finding information related to 9/11 truth. And I think what actually got me interested in it, because as I said before that point, that was past my crazy line. Oh, I mean, I know there are conspiracies. I know Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't a lone nut, but that's a step too far. In a sense, it was almost like I was clicking on some of them just to laugh at the stupid stuff that was being said in them. And to be fair, there were a lot of stupid videos that made a lot of stupid claims. But every once in a while, I would click on a video that had an interesting claim that I thought, that can't be true. That cannot possibly be true. What are you talking about? Operation Northwoods. What are you talking about? French intelligence claimed that the CIA met with Osama bin Laden in a hospital in Dubai in the summer of 2001. That's ridiculous. Oh, it's written up in The Guardian. Oh, it was apparently reported in Le Monde. Oh, okay, all right. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that. And it was that process, actually, that I think was what ultimately drew me into this, of not just hearing information and just believing it. Of course not. No, it was finding information that challenged some of my preconceptions or ideas that I thought couldn't be true, but me going out and looking for that information and finding it and confirming it and starting gradually to amass different pieces of this puzzle together until it built up into a paradigm shift in understanding. And I think that was the important part of this. It was me starting that process of doing the research and looking into it and starting to find the information that was the most compelling part for me. Because I'm not the kind of person that will generally just listen to and passively absorb information. And that really speaks to the power of the time that we are living in right now, because that process would have been, if not impossible, certainly orders of magnitude more difficult if we were not living in the internet age, where instead of having to go to some library to go through some physical repository of information and looking through microfiche and all of this to try to dig up this article here and that article there, it's literally at your fingertips and it's just a couple of searches away. Wow. And how incredibly easy it is. How incredibly spoiled we are. Probably the most spoiled generation in the history of the world, in the history of humanity. And unfortunately, I think not a lot of people are taking full advantage of that. Anyway, I was compelled because I started to find the information for myself, and I started to find the actual repositories of information where I could check this for myself. I don't have to take anyone's word for it. I can go and read the Operation Northwoods documents that are actually there. And it's not like I don't even have to go to a library. I just sit here in my pajamas at home and can read it for myself. That's incredible. And that's what drew me into this.
Wow. Very interesting. Yeah. And you touched on a lot of things that are, I'd love to unpack, but you know, I want to be respectful of your time. But the one thing for me, and I'd be curious to see how you react to it, is it almost is a double-edged sword, the internet. So what I mean by that is all of the information is available, and most of it is available on mainstream sources that would wake up humanity to what's really going on. You know, and I think that's the most frustrating point, or you know, when you're digging into this, it's not only like, is this not conjecture? It's like, this is openly stated, even in sources that these people would require in order for them to justify that this is a reality. Yes, of course, your work is pulling together these sources, right? And kind of connecting the dots, if you will, in a way that is logical, not just, you know, conspiratorial. But I think for you, is that one of the more challenging points, that what you're saying is not, you know, conspiracy, conjecture, or even disputed, it, right? It's just not accepted by the masses.
Well, I like to try to keep that intellectual humility in mind as I'm encountering people's reaction to this material, because, again, I know I was there once. I was at that point where I thought this is crazy information. So I understand when people hear this, they're not just going to simply swallow it just because I say it. and nor should they. They have to somehow engage in that process of finding the information for themselves. And it's one of those things: you can lead a horse to water, you can't make it drink. You can lead people to information, you can't make them think. You actually speak to one of the most important parts of the way that this operates, because I think people think that their conception, once they stumble into alternative media and alternative information, they may have the misconception that mainstream media is just pure, straight out factual untruths, just lies. That if they report that Biden said this, well, actually, he said this. It's the exact opposite. Sometimes that is the case. But I'd say the vast majority of cases is not that the establishment media is straight out lying. It's that they are reporting little bits of things that are factually correct, I suppose, depending what context you put them into. And it's never connecting dots between pieces of information in a way that actually makes sense of the world is, I think, the underlying problem. So if we can come, and all of us, I think, together, engaged in this, what I call the open source intelligence process of trying to find pieces of information that are out there and open and openly acknowledged, but putting them together in a way that makes sense of the world, that, to me, is the power of this alternative media revolution that's going on, and at least the potential for it. Unfortunately, as you've already alluded to, I think, unfortunately, people are already falling into the trap. Yes, they may discover, oh, the establishment media hasn't been telling me these truths. Therefore, I will now take that same paradigm I used to be in, where I'd listen to Dan Rather or Walter Cronkite or whoever telling me that's the way the world is. And now I will, oh, no, but now this alt media figure, he's going to tell me that's the way the world is. And I'm just going to, it's not really even a change. It's just a change in source, but it's not a change in perspective. We have to confront that and really, unfortunately, affect the revolution in understanding that is the only thing that will get us through this. Now, having said that, I mean, there are so many important points that I'd like to make here, but I think this goes back to the heart of the documentary I released a couple of years ago on the Media Matrix, which is all about the history of mass media and how it is shaping who we are to the point where we now engage in mediated reality more than we live in the real world. We have a screen in front of our face in one way or another more often than we are talking to real human beings. And that should be at least something to give us pause for thought. The only other thing I'd like to say is that what you say about the fact that I'm, in fact, often relying on establishment media sources and establishment things to put together this in a different way that makes sense of the world. The greatest criticism I have ever received was on the Century of Enslavement documentary, where I remember one of the YouTube comments was something like, well, this is just a bunch of information from the Federal Reserve. It's like a Federal Reserve press release. And I'm like, yes, exactly right. This isn't some weird conspiracy fantasy that I'm imagining. And trust me, bro, I've got super secret sources. No, I'm literally reading Federal Reserve documents and posting what their lawyer said in this trial, et cetera, et cetera. This is them. This is the establishment's own narrative. It's just you've never had it put together for you in a way that makes sense of the world. And I guess for me, the greatest part of all of this is that it takes an incredible amount of PR and spin and billion-dollar media industries and million-dollar TV sets with photogenic TV reporters with million-dollar smiles to sell you a pack of lies. But it takes a guy on his laptop in his apartment in Japan to tell the truth in a way that makes sense of the world. And when people see that, when they see pieces of information that suddenly it makes sense of something that didn't make sense before, you feel that. You know that. You don't need to be taught that. You don't need to be told that. You know it from within. And that's, I think, the real power of truth.
Yeah. And I was just on the Century of Enslavement. I know it's so funny. Like, I remember, I think it's yours, or it might have been in that doc or another one where they're using like almost like cartoons to talk about what they're doing with the Federal Reserve. Like, yep. You know, it's just like this newspaper or constitution. He's like, yeah, like, so we like print money out of nothing and, you know, private shareholders, you know, it's like, this is the most base, you know, cartoon I've ever seen. And it's, you know, that's kind of the joke. And, you know, it seems to be like, it's kind of, you know, the Brave New World, like, you know, we don't have to ban the books because no one will read them kind of thing, right? And even Larry Silverstein, when he's asked in New York, like, hey, you know, you said pull it, you know, what did that mean? How'd you get lucky? He just kind of shoves it off, like almost like they don't even care, you know? So yeah, it's fascinating, James. But, you know, as you say, I do think, you know, truth will prevail. But, you know, I would like to just get kind of a better understanding of your kind of worldview, right? Because you're putting out all of this great information, you know, and it's in a very like journalistic type fashion. But I think what's lost is your own personal kind of, you know, viewpoints on what's really going on in the world, right? And we have everything from central banking to the WEF to, Federal Reserve to the World Health Organization. You know, we have digital ID, all this stuff. So anyways, I'd just be curious, like high level, you know, if you could summarize like the state of things happening today, like what is happening, you know, who is doing it and why, to your best understanding.
Right. Well, fundamentally, if I can break it down as much as I possibly can, what motivates me and why I do what I do is because I am concerned about the state of human freedom itself. And that is the freedom for people to have completely different viewpoints and completely different ideas and live in completely different ways than I do. That is what freedom means. That is what it entails. And that is precisely why it is never an attractive idea for people in positions of entrenched power. Power does not want freedom. Power wants a top-down system of oligarchical control that they can then use to manipulate the world to their own advantage, which is, generally speaking, how they got into positions of power in the first place, because that is what power represents. That is how power operates. So freedom is antithetical to that idea of top-down control. And so as someone who is motivated by the idea of human freedom, that is an essential part of what I see is happening right now. The thing that unites all of the different various players that I talk about in the oligarchical system of control that exists, I think, is not so much an explicit ideology so much as the underlying assumption that we do need some form of top-down oligarchical control. And what flavor that takes and what way you implement that control and for what reason may differ from person to person who's sitting at that power table, but they all agree at least on that much. And from that perspective, it certainly makes it easier for me, for example, to wonder, which politician should I be supporting in this rigged phony selection process? Oh, wait, how about none of them? How about none of the above? And that is, I think, the way that I start to see the world and the way that it's structured. The other underlying part of this ruling ideology that I think has been in one form or another stewarding over humanity for hundreds, thousands of years at this point is almost an anti-human sort of agenda to ultimately, I suppose there are different flavors of this as well, but there are people, I think, in the technocratic ruling elite at this point who believe to truly believe and have swallowed all the transhumanist nonsense that we're going to upload our consciousness and live in digital bodies forever and all of that nonsense. But it still speaks to the fundamental idea that humanity itself, it's messy, organic bodies that just aren't perfect, has to be eliminated in some way, has to be perfected. And we see that reflected in so many different aspects of this agenda, from the old Masonic idea of squaring the circle. We're going to perfect what God left unperfected. We're going to become gods ourselves, I think, has been a guiding part of this ruling ideology for a long time. And that, too, is antithetical to what I believe. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I fight back against. And interestingly enough, I find I get the most pushback on that aspect of the work that I do. When I started this, I thought they would be extremely controversial and people would say 9/11 truth. Oh, you're one of those crazy. And yes, of course, I suppose if my information ever makes its way into some normie sphere, there will be that kind of pushback. But generally speaking, the most of the people that I have encountered in my 17 years now of doing this have been receptive to that type of information, probably selection bias because they're looking for this type of information and they encountered my work. But at any rate, I haven't received a lot of pushback about that or some of the conspiratorial reality that I talk about. It's when I start explicitly defending humanity from people who would say that humans are a cancer on the earth and there's too many people. We need to get rid of them and control them and limit them and somehow order them just in a better way than those people are trying to limit and control and order us. Don't worry, we'll do it the right way. When I push back against that fundamental idea is when I actually get the most pushback from people in the audience. And I think that speaks, unfortunately, to the power of the manipulation of the propaganda that has convinced people essentially to desire their own enslavement, to desire their own ultimate culling, which to me is truly almost unspeakably sad, because that is the most basic instinctual level that any species can have, is just, hey, I want my species to survive. And that, if you can drill that out of the population, then it is game over, because what even are we fighting for at that point?
Yeah, very well said. And isn't that the hardest part of, quote, being awake? When, you know, it's fine for people to have disagreements, different political views, but when you see people defending a system or an ideology that literally openly wants to destroy them, you know, I think that is one of the hardest lessons I've had to learn in this movement, right? Not just people saying that's interesting or I don't know, but, you know, actively going out of their way to defend a system and, you know, that is trying to destroy them. You know, it's sick, right? And yeah, I'd be really curious. Like, I know you take a very agnostic approach to, you know, a lot of these things, but for me, you know, it does seem like these people, like, beyond just trying to get power, are evil anti-human. Like, to me, it feels like almost like a Satan or a demonic force, or, you know, the demiurge Gnosticism. Like, you know, to me, that helps me better understand the level of evil of these people than just greed, control, you know. I'd be curious your thoughts on that, because I know, I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, there is a malevolence to that anti-human ideology that I'm talking about that is not really explicable if we do not have some sort of moral understanding of the universe. I believe there is a moral dimension to the universe that we can apprehend as human beings. We understand fundamentally when something is right and wrong. Obviously, there's lots of gray areas and things that are difficult to determine because of context and understanding. But there are certain basic lines in which I think are pretty obviously moral and immoral. And if there is good, then there is evil. And if there is evil, then there is good. So I'm not afraid to go in that direction. Of course, that exists. And how do I, as someone who, obviously, like every other human being, I'm not some perfect moral angel floating on a cloud, but I do know when I've done something wrong, when I've been unethical, that I feel that gnawing of my conscience. I shouldn't have done that. And I'm not talking about going out and killing people or anything like that. Just the little moral transgressions, the lies and things that we do every single day, all of us, every single human being. Most of us have that conscience that keeps us from doing that. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I should really apologize to that person, et cetera, et cetera. But there are people, presumably, I have no access to someone's consciousness, but there seems to be people who do not have that pang of conscience. And there are different ways of understanding that, one of which that I've talked about in the past is psychopathy. As in, there are people who are born literally without the ability to feel empathy for other human beings, and thus use human beings completely as means to an end, as opposed to as ends in themselves, which is one of the ways that this has been framed in moral philosophy over the centuries. If we treat people as a means to an end, we are using them essentially as utility for our own pleasure function or whatever it is that we're after. And that in and of itself is immoral. So I think there's some element of that. And yeah, how do we describe that? Is it psychopathy? Is it literally some sort of demon entity? Is it some kind of interdimensional thing? Again, that's above my pay grade. How am I going to determine that? All I know is that there is evil that exists in the world, and I am opposed to it.
Yeah, well said, right? And I don't think any of us know for certain, right? Just for me, you know, a lot of these types of lenses, I think, bode well, because, you know, you get a lot of materialist, like, atheists who are starting to wake up now, like a lot of the more mainstream intellectuals, like, you know, Brett Weinstein and stuff. And a lot of times, you know, they frame it as, you know, it's greed, you know, corporate greed or, you know, yada, yada, yada. But to me, it's like, I just know in my gut, this is evil stuff, right? And it's beyond what you would need to profit. It's beyond what you would need, you know. And even still, like, there's this open depopulation agenda. So why would corporations?
Exactly. When you can create the money out of thin air, what's the point of getting more money? I mean, that clearly cannot be the ultimate end.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they just kept us long enough to build our own enslavement. And that's something is a great transition. I want to speak to your hashtag Solutions Watch. And I really first want to thank you for taking this, because something that got me out of what I would call the truther movement or community is just this endless, I call it trauma bonding, where we're just bonding over how awful and evil it is, you know, Klausy Schwab, adrenochrome, you know, endless stuff. And it's, James, it's totally exhausting. It's demoralizing and, you know, it'll kill you. So I love that you took this initiative years ago to start Solutions Watch. And one of the things I know you had stated in there is, yeah, stop the, doom loops and stuff, you know. And so I'd be really curious. You've been doing the Solutions Watch for a while now, and I recommend the audience check that out. But in terms of solutions, what speaks to you as kind of the way forward for people? You know, what actions do you think people should be taking? And I know a lot of that is also mindset. So maybe we could start there. And
yeah. Yes, let's start at mindset, because you're exactly right. The trauma bonding that unfortunately is one of the key glues that keep the alternative together opposed to the establishment. Oh, we're over here because we are all the people that are being put upon and we recognize the evil things that are happening. That is a first step towards understanding. I think you can't probably reach the other side of that until you understand and recognize the problem. But once you have understood and recognized the problem, if all you do is keep pointing to the problem every day, all day, every day, oh, look at that horrible thing that they are doing to us, it ultimately makes it objectifies yourself, as in you become an object that is being acted upon rather than an autonomous, sovereign, individual subject who can make your own choices and carve your own path in life. And obviously that path is going to be circumscribed by your material circumstances in all sorts of ways. I'm not a billionaire. I can't do this. I can't do that. But within the realm of what I can do, at the very least, there are things that I can do, and I can affect the course of my life. And if I'm not actively attempting to do that, then what am I doing? And far be it from me to help the editorial writers of the establishment media who love to write that same editorial that they write hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times a year as to the psychology of conspiracy theories. Why do people believe conspiracy theories? Just type that into a search engine and you will find literally thousands of articles at this point that have been written about this. And they all come back to the fact, oh, it's so comforting for these people to have an explanation for the world. When in fact, really everything is just this giant pinball machine and things are ricocheting everywhere and there's no meaning to anything. And you're stupid for thinking that there is. Okay, I'm certainly not going to help those editorial writers, but there is, I believe, something to the idea that it is in some way comforting simply to be a victim. Mm. I am the victim of those people, they, them, those that are doing that conspiracy thing. And that's why my life sucks. And that's why I can't do anything and I can't accomplish anything and nothing will ever happen for me because they, them, those are doing that thing. And there are elements of truth to that, as in, again, I'm not a billionaire and I can't do this or that thing, but there are things that I can do in my life. And until we start to switch that mindset from being the poor put upon, oh my God, we're the innocent victims of they, them, those, to no, we are autonomous, sovereign, beautiful, human, free human beings who can affect change in this world. I don't know what you're going to accomplish unless and until you have that mindset switch. So that is specifically where Solutions Watch came from, because before that point, I had a weekly series called Propaganda Watch, where I was dissecting propaganda every single week and looking at this piece of propaganda and looking at that piece of propaganda. And I'd like to think it was a valuable exercise. It's still up there in my archives if people want to go and look at the Propaganda Watch series. And every single time I tried to break down some aspect of the propaganda so that people could identify it and understand how it's working, and then hopefully apply that and start to see, oh, I get it. That propaganda is trying to make me do this. Oh, that propaganda is trying to make me believe this. So I hope there was some utility to it. But after a couple of years, a few years of doing that, I realized not just the audience, but even me, myself, as the person who was creating that series, I would always have one eye out for, oh, that, you know, that would be a good Propaganda Watch piece. Oh, that's, oh, look at that propaganda. I want to talk about that one. Oh, there's some propaganda. So I recognized, oh, my intentionality is actually now towards finding propaganda. Why? What is the point of that? Yes. Okay, great. Yes, I can identify it. I can break it down. I can show you how it's working. I can show you how to avoid it. That's great. But again, if that's all I ever do, is that going to be fundamentally helpful to your life? And so I decided, oh, I have to make the conscious switch, because right now I see propaganda everywhere because I'm looking for it, essentially. How about if I change my perspective and instead of doing Propaganda Watch, I do Solutions Watch? So now my entire intentionality, my eye is going to be one, I'm going to have one eye out for, oh, that's a good idea. We could do that. Oh, that's, I like what that person's doing over there. I want to shine a light on that. Oh, hey, let's try this. And it, I did that essentially on faith. Just, I think that this will probably change the way that I'm seeing the world, the way I'm interacting with it, the types of things that I see. And I took that leap and said, okay, I'm going to make a weekly series on solutions. Good news, positive things, things that we can do. And I have no idea. Is this going to work? Am I, you know, I'm going to get three episodes in and realize, oh, I have nothing else to say about this. But I took that leap and, you know what? 3+ years now later, I'm still doing it pretty much every week. And I think that speaks to the power of just that idea. Instead of looking and focusing on problems, how about if we look and focus on solutions? And what can we find in there? And as I try to make explicit on Solutions Watch, although people usually don't, I think, get this point, but it's not about, okay, this thing that I'm talking about is the key, it's the solution, it's going to change your life, and if you do this thing, everything will be better. Of course not. You are an individual living in your own individual context that may or may not have anything to do with me living here in Japan or someone else living in Timbuktu or what have you. We're all experiencing very, very different aspects of this reality, but here are some ideas, and hopefully people can abstract the underlying idea from any particular solution to see if and how they can apply it in their own life. And that, you know, if I have nothing, if this accomplishes nothing else other than just changing people's mindset from looking at problems to looking at solutions, then I will consider this to be successful.
Ah, so good, man. So inspiring too. Yeah. Yeah. You're not preachy, right? You're not like, you know, here, you know, buy my 10-year, you know, storable food supply, or, get 100,000.
Nothing rounds. Against 10-year storable food supplies. But yeah, if I'm the guy who's selling it to you, you know, that's when it starts to become, is this journalism or is this something else?
I know, man. I remember, I started watching Alex Jones when I was 12, and I remember, like, I'm Canadian too, fellow Canadian, right? And even then, I thought, like, at any point, the UN was gonna come in, and, you know, it's gonna be martial law, and, you know, I'm buying gold, I tried to convince my parents to buy gold and food supply at, like, 13 and stuff, you know? And we're still here, and I think to an extent, that's baked into the cake, this idea that it's just around the corner, right? This great collapse, you know, is always just around the corner. And I think that's the most destructive part of the truth or conspiracy community, in that almost nothing happens like that, right? It's just this slow roll, and they get us mentally to think, it's kind of in a fear state where we just think at any point, like, the U.S. dollar is going to collapse. You know, it's not, the U.S. dollar is not going to go anywhere for 30 years, in my opinion. It's just going to keep getting worse, and maybe you know what I mean. So yeah, maybe you can speak to
okay
that, right?
This is an important point, so let's flesh this out. I fully 100% understand where you're coming from, because when I first started encountering this information, 2006 was when I really started going down the rabbit hole, started the Corbett Report in 2007. And yes, at that time, certainly with all of the stuff surrounding the 9/11 truth movement and the false flag terror idea that was starting to seep its way into the public consciousness and swirling around events and dates like 666, June 6, 2006, or 777 is going to be the 7th of July, 2007 is going to be some sort of false flag event. You know, they like this numerology stuff and all of that. And to some extent, I was also caught up in just having learnt about all of this. I was expecting, okay, there's going to be a nuclear false flag tomorrow and they're going to go into full martial law. That was the way I was oriented. And I even started the Corbett Report podcast with that in mind, thinking, you know, if all of this kicks off, you know, in a couple months, I better at the very least get out what information I can get out. And I remember consciously structuring the first 10 episodes of the podcast to try to hit on all of the key topics, central banking and the global warming fraud and the terror police state and false flag terrorism and World War III. And I was thinking about that quite consciously. Here I am 17 years later, still trying to flesh out this information that essentially I put forward in the first 10 episodes. Well, let me flesh that out for another couple decades. But so I understand that mindset. Having said that, I think obviously there are inflection points in history, and there are times, as I believe Lenin has been quoted as saying, although I've never looked into this, so maybe I shouldn't be repeating it, but more things happen in some years than happen in entire decades or whatever that phrase is meant to be. And certainly there are events that really do change things, like a 9/11 or a scamdemic or something that really does change the game. And we're always prepared for that. But there's the great Hemingway quote that, man, I really need to commit to memory because I'm never going to be able to cite this off the top of my head. But it's something like someone is asking someone, oh, how did you go bankrupt? Well, it was very, very slow at first. And then all of us, then overnight or whatever the phrase is. I really should commit that to memory. But people get the sense. Yes. No. The U.S. dollar, for example, on a long, steady, slow decline until there is a terminus event. And that event can change, and presumably paradigm shifts, like in science or anything else, don't happen. Yes, they happen gradually, and then all of a sudden. Yeah. And suddenly you're in a new paradigm. And that's, I think, that's what we're geared towards. That's what people are looking for, because those are obviously the most interesting events to examine. Who cares about the long, slow, gradual trends? We're looking for those terminal points where something is going to fundamentally shift. And yes, we should be gearing up and ready and prepared. And that might be part of the solutions that we're looking for. How do I prepare for certain alternatives and things that could happen? But I think we shouldn't ignore the long, slow, boring parts where, oh, by the way, all of the infrastructure for everything that's going to happen on the other side of this event is being set up now. That was the real point of the Homeland Security State, for example. It wasn't about some 777 false flag nuclear event that was going to go into hot martial law and people were going to be rounded up in FEMA quarantine camps. No, it was about building up the legal and judicial and intelligence infrastructure for the total surveillance state that is now applied whether there was a big false flag nuclear event or not. No, they're just going to do it. And in the same way, they spent decades building up the biosecurity infrastructure. And I talked about that and I said, hey, look at this, the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act that they're putting in through state after state after state gives governors carte blanche to start sticking people in the arm and quarantining them and all of this. This is important stuff. But it takes, you know, two decades maybe for that to play out into an actual event. So I think, yes, we have to understand the trends, but also understand there are points at which the trends that have been making themselves manifest become something else in reality, and there can be paradigm shifts.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and the saying, you know, there's weeks where decades happens and decades where weeks happen, right? And
right.
I mean, COVID was one of those things for sure. Yeah, I'm not trying to say, you know, it's always that way. I'm just talking as a reformed truther, right? So I do a lot of like ex-truther videos when I started off. And that to me was the mind parasite for myself that I had to be honest about. It's like, it's always just around the corner where, you know, But speaking to that, want to be respectful of your time. Maybe we could just close out for today with predictions. I'd be curious to just learn how is James viewing things right now. You know it seems like the there is a bit of a critical mass, a bit of a great awakening. You know, I am very skeptical of Jones and Tucker Carlson and all these people, but it does seem like more people than ever are starting to get the idea. And then it also seems like the people in, quote, control have never been more psychopathic. So I'd be curious, where are you seeing things now? Where do you think we are? Where do you think we're going in the next few years?
Well, I guess that assessment it seems like it's about right in general broad terms. But what does that mean in specifics? Well, I came up with a formulation probably about the beginning of the decade that I'm probably still going to go by, and in which I was thinking that what we are facing in the short term is likely to be the introduction of the digital ID infrastructure and everything that's associated with that. And in fact, you could really look at the entire scamdemic as essentially that. It was the introduction of the digital infrastructure for tracking and controlling human populations. And that was, to the extent that that's what they were aiming at, remarkably successful. The just even inserting the idea in the public consciousness that, oh, you're going to have to check in with your QR code when you visit a public space so that we can track and know where you were, and contact tracing and all of these ideas embedded in the public consciousness. And then also it was a test case for, we are now essentially slaves to our digital devices, because it came to the point in certain places and certain times that you wouldn't really be able to do this without a slave tracking device known as a smartphone to scan a QR code or to have your credentials on you. And I think that is an incredibly scary part of what we're heading into if we keep going down this path. So the creation of the digital ID, which is going to be tied into all the things that come with that, the CBDCs and the social credit scores. Again, I don't think this will all happen overnight, but we are heading in that direction. So that was my vision for the short term. Medium term, the introduction of the CBDC, some sort of monetary type, not a complete changeover. Again, I think if people are expecting they're going to close all the banks and get rid of all money and it's going to be CBDC all at once, that seems unrealistic to me. But the introduction of this alternative system, hey guys, now you're going to have this option and it'll be totally voluntary at first. And then they bring in more and more controls on it, et cetera, et cetera. The long-term vision, as in towards the end of the decade, was what I was imagining was the reintroduction of hot war into the global political scale. And it's interesting. I say I get the most pushback against when I'm talking about, you know, humans aren't a cancer on the earth. Well, actually, they are. And there are too many people. Well, actually, one of the other things that I get the most pushback about is when I talk about hot war, because I think people, I understand why, because my perspective is that essentially there is a sort of collaboration amongst the supposed geopolitical enemies on the geopolitical chessboard. Insofar as I understand and conceptualize it in the way, for example, Anthony Sutton talked about the Cold War and the Soviets and the Americans that were opposing them. Well, actually, why was there all these Western technology transfers to the Soviet Union? Why was there the Lend-Lease program? Why was the entire Soviet economy essentially propped up by the Americans for decades? That doesn't seem to make sense. Oh, it's because perhaps there are vested interests that have an interest in playing two sides off against each other so that they could more completely control their own domestic economy and political population, etc. So with that in mind, people think, well, okay, so if there's one side that's controlling all of these other sides, like the Chinese and the Russians and what have you, then they'll never go to war. But no, I don't think that's how that works, because I think World War I was an engineered event that took decades of geopolitical machinations. If people are interested in that, they can go to my World War I conspiracy documentary where I laid all of that out. I think World War II was a engineered event that was controlled in many ways, but they still happened. They were real wars that really killed millions of people. Really, people died. There was a lot of bloodshed spilled. And yes, I think there were interests that were controlling all the sides of the conflict, but that doesn't mean that the war doesn't happen. And in the same way, I think, yes, surely the Chinese and the Russians and the WEF and NATO and BRICS and SCO are all kind of, in a sense, if not active collaborators, at least share that ideology I was talking about, the ruling class ideology of the top-down control, and thus have similar interests that converge at certain points, and they're being funded by financial interests and corporate interests behind the scenes, etc., that create this web of interlocking interests, doesn't mean that there won't be war. And I think we are heading into a World War III scenario, and everyone always, I get the objections that people have to that, and Well, actually, we're already in World War III. Yes, I've said that many times myself. That's true. But I mean this in the conventional sense of an actual military confrontation. And I, well, anyway, people will continue to poo-poo it unless and until it happens. Fair enough. But in the exact same way, I think at the dawn of the 20th century, people would have absolutely scoffed at you. World War? That's ridiculous. What are you talking about? That's not going to happen until it happens. So I think that's the scenario that we're playing out.
For sure. And hubris, right? We always think we can't do it again, that we've learned all of our lessons, you know, that we're smarter than those who came before us. James, I could speak to you for hours. I'd love to have you on again sometime. I want to be very respectful of your time because I know you got your book solid here. So I really want to thank you. Besides, I'll leave you with one quick question. Besides going to Corbett.com/members to donate, as I do.
Corbettreport.com/members.
My apologies. What would you recommend people do to support you? You know, where can people find you? And do you have any kind of, you know, last words of, of recommendations for solutions or practical
right,
things?
Yes. People can do? If people want to support me, obviously, again, yes, they can do that monetarily. But as always, the best way to support this work is simply to get the information out to other people. And that could be sending links to my podcasts and articles and what have you to people, you know, but it doesn't have to be. If there are people out there who find this information valuable, who want to put it in their own words and put it out in the world in their own way, good. Have at it. That's awesome. It's great to see when people take some of the ideas that I've started and run with it and put it in different ways, because I genuinely think it's not going to be my voice that's going to change the world. It's going to be many, many different voices putting this information in different ways from their own perspectives that will reach different people in different ways. So that's the best thing you can do to support my work, is get the information out there. And that can take many different forms. Yes, I'm at CorbettReport.com. That is the best place to go because, yes, I'm on BitChute and Odyssey and Rumble. I'm not on YouTube. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on Telegram. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on Insta. So what platforms am I on this week? Where am I scrubbed? Where am I censored? When I get scrubbed off of some platform, are you going to be able to find me somewhere else? CorbettReport.com will always be the last line of defense on that until they start seizing domain names and we'll have to deal with that when we come to it. But at any rate, for the time being, CorbettReport.com is the best place to go. And if people are interested in what we've been talking about, if they're new to my work, perhaps you'd be interested in starting with Solutions Watch. And if so, then you can go to the menu bar and just look at the audio, and there's a Solutions Watch section, and you can click on that, and you can just browse through and find an episode that you think is interesting or about a topic that you find is interesting, and see what information is there and whether and how that can be applied to your life. That is the way to start moving forward, rather than simply, woe is me, look at what they, them, those are doing to us.
Phenomenal. James, thanks so much for your time. Guys, go check him out, CorbettReport.com. I've just been paying just $1 a month, the recurring payment, for a few years now. It's the absolute minimum we can do to support a legend. Guys on the live stream, sorry I couldn't get to your call or your comments. I'm just going to hop off, say a quick goodbye to James, and I'll be right back on. So give me one second here.